Hi folks, I'm Buzz and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm glad to be here. Step two tonight. This is entirely made up of my experience combined with the little knowledge I picked up practicing the 12 steps in my life. I'm not an expert by any definition of the word, and I don't feel qualified to do a how-to on a steps, and this is not a how-to, it's more my experience. The steps actually say little about alcohol or sobriety. I know people that have more sobriety than I do admit that they do not do the steps or formal step 4, 6, 9, and they stay sober. The truth is, there are members that stay sober without ever working the steps. I don't think they're necessary. Early on, Bill Wilson said the steps are designed for living, and I agree. And right now, I'm presently the oldest I've ever been, and I'm the happiest I've ever been. And I attribute this to practicing the 12 steps in my everyday life. And I'm going to try to share that. The steps are numbered, and each step leads into the next. And I believe you have to have some understanding of the first step before you go on to the second step. Please don't misunderstand what I said there. I don't think you're ever going to... I know I'm never going to understand the steps completely because there's always more revealed. So don't ever let your understanding of the last step keep you from going on. Move on and... And I'm still learning, and more is being revealed, and right now, by now, I know very little. So let's move on to step two. Last week, we went over step one, and actually the lead-in for step two is my life was unmanageable. I was powerless over alcohol. That was pretty easy for me, but my life was unmanageable. I had the illusion that I would be able to manage my own life once I quit drinking and drugging, and that wasn't true. Step two, it says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And as I said last week, when I came in, I did not believe in God. I told some people I was an atheist. I don't think I was an atheist. I was afraid of God. And I was extremely agnostic. I was also pretty self-centered because I thought they wrote the chapter for the agnostic just for me. And I wasn't even born when it was written. But it said, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And that power greater than myself sounded a lot like God. So I just kind of shut down at first and kind of negated that step because I don't think I was ready for God, and I think God knew that. Sanity was a hard thing for me too, because if I had to have a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, it insinuated I was insane. And my definition of insanity was somebody that didn't know right from wrong, the reality. They saw little green men, people that were psychotic and so forth. And I mean, I was a drunk, but I wasn't any of those. And then I thought maybe it was the crazy things I did when I was drunk, but that's what whiskey does. If the Pope drank a bottle of whiskey today, he would do unpope-like behavior, you know, because that's what it does. And I came to realize eventually, probably through the help of a big sponsor, what was insane was every time I ever relapsed, I was completely sober. And I went back to drinking. when I was completely sober. And alcohol was killing me. And right now I've been sober a long time. And I'm completely sober. I'm sure that if I got stopped on the way home, my BAC is 0.0, because it won't go any lower than that. But that means if I ever get drunk again and I make a choice to take a drink, that's insane. And I needed a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And like I said, I wasn't ready for God at that time. Now, a power greater than myself, I wasn't willing to believe in God. And I kind of left it at that. And there was an event when I was 61 days sober. Some of you might remember Neil. I lived out in the country about 9 miles away. I was 61 days sober. And I was 9 miles from Cambridge Springs, and he was going to come out and get me. And in the mail that morning, I got a check for $40. And it was legit, it was good, and it was mine. It was money owed to me for a job I did. And it wasn't expected. As soon as I got that check, all I could think of was, and what I refer to that, is that feeling that a double shot of Southern Comfort gives you. It's just, boom, ah. And that's what I could think about, and I wasn't thinking past that. So I had a plan. Neil was going to come out, and I was going to tell him I had a girlfriend, and I was going to ride into Cambridge, and I was going to go see the girl, but didn't have to worry about me. I wouldn't drink. And actually, I did have a girlfriend. I called her Miss Southern Comfort. And she was up at the town tavern waiting for me, you know. And that's all I could think about. And I'm, you know, you have to understand, I was going through withdrawal from alcohol and also from another substance. And I was dope sick. And I had anxiety, panic attacks, anxiety attacks, depression. I hadn't slept in 61 days of solid sleep. And I couldn't hardly eat. And all I could think of was that, and that would relax me instantly. And that's, I wasn't thinking past that. So Neil was a wise old guy. He worked his program by, he would pick up some loser that was nobody thought was going to make it, and he'd take him to meetings for 6 months. And, you know, that's about all he would do. He didn't say much. He'd just take you to meetings. And I was doing so good, he took me to meetings for a couple of years. But he came out, and I spit it out that I was just going to ride into town with him, and I was going to go see this girl, and I wasn't going to go to the meeting. And the first thing he said, I've never forgot, the first thing he said is, there's no problem you're ever going to have. Taking a drink won't make it worse. And I said, yeah, I'm not going to drink. I'm just going to go see this girl, and I haven't had a girlfriend in a while. Which was true. I weighed 125 pounds. Neil probably thought, I don't think so, but he didn't say that. But then he said, why don't you go to the meeting first and then go see your girl? And I couldn't think quick enough to think a lie to tell him. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll go to the meeting first. That's what I said on the outside. On the inside, I'm there. Damn it, I'm going to go to your meeting. Then I'm going to go out to the town tavern, cash my check. I'm going to do it. And so I went into the meeting, big old chip on my shoulder. I didn't talk to anybody, didn't say anything. I went to the back of the room, lit up a cigarette, got a cup of coffee and lit up a cigarette. You're allowed to smoke in those days, the meetings. And I'm sitting there. I don't know if you ever tried to stay pissed off at a meeting, but it's hard because people come up. And it, Buzz, it's good to see you. You're sober a couple of months now. How you doing? You look good. Can I sit here? And it's like I could feel myself melting, and that was even pissing me off worse, you know? So I sat there. I'm going to sit through this meeting. And a guy got up there, and last week I told you about the spiritual connection. He got up there. He had 7 years sobriety, and he told what many people do. He told what it was like, what happened, what it was like today. And he started telling him what it was like, you know, and I started identifying with the fights and the breakup of relationships and making a fool out of yourself and losing jobs and getting kicked out of bars, you know, and then he told what had happened. And it's always horrible what happens. People don't come in here unless they're desperate. And I was desperate when I came in. And this guy was desperate. And I could identify with that. Think about it. The name itself, Alcoholics Anonymous, keeps the riffraff out. Because who else would come in here but an alcoholic, you know? And so I listened to him and he started telling about what it was like, and he had just borrowed $4,000 from his credit union, bought a new bass boat motor and trailer. And I'm sitting there, I'm smoking a cigarette and I'm drinking coffee, and I'm thinking, if I had $4,000, I'd kill myself. I'd be lucky if I survived the drunk that I was planning for $40. And I can remember like it was yesterday. I thought, this sobriety stuff is not bad. And you know, after the meeting, I got in a car with Neil, and he didn't say, what about your girl? He probably knew. And I went home, and he took me home. And the next day, I woke up. I had two things I wouldn't have had if I'd have went to the town tavern. One, I had my $40 check still in my pocket, and I had 62 days sobriety. You see, I promised before the meeting I was going to drink, and it made sense to drink. And that was the insanity we're talking about in step two. I was going to drink and it made sense. Okay, I couldn't think past that drink. After the meeting, it seemed insane to drink. My sanity was restored. Not by my thinking, but by a spiritual power greater than myself that I found in these rooms, in the literature, and by connecting with people just like you that are sitting there. If you think about it, we all have the same story. Different details, but it's the same story. You know, the first 18 months, I was coming off of two substances, and I was very addicted to alcohol. That's how I got addicted to the other one, because I'd go to work and I'd have to take a few drinks to go to work to get rid of the jitters, and alcohol stinks, and I was getting in trouble, and this other stuff didn't stink. And in fact, I had kind of a good time at work. So anyway, I had a lot of post-acute withdrawal, anxiety attacks. I was like a, Neil said I was like a fart in a hot skillet. I don't know what to map it. But anyway, and many times I promised myself I could drink after the meeting that night just to get through the day. And that night after the meeting, I never wanted to drink. And I found out I could connect to folks on the phone. I could connect through the big book, other literature, the grapevine. Now I can connect online. I can connect many ways. And AA is definitely a power greater than myself. Now, for years I used to illustrate it. I'd keep a nail on my desk. And I'd say, pound this through my desk. And say, no, give me a hammer. No, just pound it through. And I don't care how macho you are, you're going to beat your fist bloody before you're going to pound that nail through that podium. But if I give you a piece of wood with a piece of metal on it called a hammer, a very simple tool, you can pound that through there with ease. And a hammer is not God. That's just it. It's a tool. And AA is the tool that's the power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. I believe it's a divine power. It was given to us. Actually, it started out in about 29 with Roland Hazard and Carl Jung. and it was spread to Abby Thatcher, and it spread there from there to Bill Wilson, to Dr. Bob, and to Bill Dodson, and we're descendants of them, all of us. And the thing is, you know, Father Martin, Father Joseph Martin, was an alcoholic, and he was a Catholic priest that I held in very high esteem. He's deceased now. He started Father Martin's Ashley, a world-known rehab, and he was just a powerful man, and I just adored him. And one time somebody asked him, as a priest, he says, "Father, does prayer work for a toothache?" And Father Martin said, "Yeah, especially if you say it while you're sitting in a dentist's chair with your mouth open." And then he goes on, "A divine power, God, gave us dentists for bad teeth, doctors for broken bones, mechanics for broken mufflers, and he gave us AA for broken people like that are broken with alcohol," and I was one of those. And I really believe that then and now, AA is the power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. Now, I didn't believe in God when I came in, and I've told many people, and I said it last week, I believe in God with all my heart now. But that didn't happen overnight. I wasn't ready for God. And I think God knew that. And I needed a tangible power that I could connect with on my own. And I can connect with God now through prayer and meditation. And I do certain things to meditate and so forth. And I suppose you all do different things to make that connection. But when I'm in trouble, I can't. A couple of years ago, I was going to put two holes in a guy right in his chest, and I was so upset that I couldn't pray and meditate, but I had to talk to somebody. And when the thing is, I had to talk to somebody in the program. See that? That's a cell phone. Probably everybody in here's got one in their pocket. I probably got 200 numbers in there, and some of them are, you know, my doctor, the gas company, the mechanic, you know, electric company when electric's out. But most of the rest are people. In fact, I'm looking around the room, and there's a lot of people in this room that their number's right in there. I thought, yeah, you're in there, Joe. You know that. Anyway, and if I get in trouble, I can hit a button, and I'm talking to Joe. And if Joe doesn't answer the phone, I can hit another button and talk to the guy next to him on either side. There's people in here I can talk to. I can talk to Kevin. He's in there. Like Prego. That's in there. So I found out I cannot stay sober on my own. But for 38 years, I've never had to. You folks are always there. I went to see a lifelong friend who was dying in Cleveland Clinic. And when I walked in, I knew he was dying, and I knew he was dying now. And we had a talk about what was going on afterwards. And at the time, this was probably 10 years ago, you couldn't take your cell phone into the hospital. And I walked out there. I didn't think about taking a drink, but I was an emotional wreck. And when I got to my car, the phone's in the ashtray. I called my sponsor. He was working. I left him a message. And then I called somebody else, and I talked to them till my sponsor called me back. So he came in. I talked to him. He was working, so he had to hang up. I called somebody else. To make a long story short, it was 2 hours and 15 minutes. I was by myself in the car, but I was never alone. I was talking to somebody all 2 hours and 15 minutes on the way home. And that's the power of the program. I never once thought about taking a drink. Do I get to hurting and I'm sober? Yes. This watch is waterproof. I get them because I get them wet a lot. But the thing is, it's waterproof. That doesn't mean it won't get wet. Just because we believe in God and we have a power greater than ourselves, there's going to be some tears. And that's another thing. And I needed something tangible that I could connect with. And I think God gave me that. I said that I believe in God with all my heart. How did this come about? A couple years ago, I sponsored a guy from up here in Erie. He would come down, and this guy was abused by an organized religion in his upbringing. And he was a lot like me. He was afraid of God. He says, "I don't want to hear God. I don't believe in that, and I don't want to talk about it." I told him, I says, "That's all I got is the steps in God." So we went into the steps, and I started explaining this, and I identified with him because I didn't believe in God in the beginning at first. And he said, "How did that happen?" He says, "Do you believe in God now?" I says, "Yes, with all my heart." He says, "How and when did that happen?" And it was like I got hit with a sucker punch. I didn't know what to say. And I thought I should probably talk about that a little bit, for maybe there's some of you that are new that don't believe in God, that are agnostic. After all, we have a whole chapter on it, and it's, if you've never read it, it's probably the most spiritual piece of literature I've ever read in my life. And I'm gonna quote, well, most of the paragraph. I'm gonna paraphrase a little bit. And I'll tell you about that when I get to it. This is a quote from a paragraph on page 47 of the Big Book. The chapter is We Agnostics. In the first two sentences, we needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe there is a power greater than myself? That's right out of the Big Book. I could say yes to that question when I was 62 days sober. I was very skeptical about believing in God, but I believed in AA, and I believed it was a power greater than myself. I'm going to paraphrase the next sentence because it's sexist, and I'm kind of a feminist. I had three sisters and I raised two daughters, and I want the ladies to have the, yeah, I want the ladies to be, so, and you got to forgive Wilson because it was written in 1939, and what I'm going to change is men. And it says, as soon as a man can, and I'm going to change it, and they're going to change it a couple places. And this is the sentence, my version. As soon as a member can say that they do believe, we can assure them they are on their way. And the thing is, I didn't know it that day, but step two introduced me to God, a spiritual life. Because the power greater than myself was AA. Now, if you'd asked me right then, do you believe in God? I'd have said, hell no. But I was on my way. It was happening. And you see, step two, I came to believe that there was a power greater than myself, AA. And even though I still did not believe in God, I started to notice that the people I admired and respected in AA had a strong belief in God. And there's got to be something to it, you know? I mean, and I think, I really do think God knew I was not ready for Him yet. Now, I'm going to read the last sentence, but I'm going to read the sentence before that I just read before I do. I'm going to repeat it. As soon as a member can say that they do believe, we can assure them that they are on their way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And I don't know what a big book costs. It's worth every cent of it. But the thing is, that single paragraph is worth many times what the big book costs, just that one paragraph to me. Because once you accept that there is a power greater than yourself, it grows. It's like a grass seed. It isn't much when you put it in the ground, but it grows and it bears fruit. And that's what we do here in AA. And that, really, that's what the nuts of the whole 12 steps is about. In fact, I'm going to step a little bit ahead of myself to step 12. I'll revisit it later. But in step 12, I think, you know, the steps never once say you'll stay sober. They don't say anything about that. You know, they say we were powerless over alcohol. That's the only time it even alludes to drinking. But it does say having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You know, if you work the steps, you have a spiritual awakening that changes you. It changes you physically and it changes you mentally. We had a saying in AA when I came in. I don't hear it much anymore. But the saying was, if you commit suicide in the first 5 years, you kill the wrong person. You know? And for me, it took 10 or 15 before I was kind of comfortable in my own skin. It took me a while. Usually it doesn't take people that long. That spiritual awakening, and I never saw it coming. I can't tell you what day I started to believe, but I do know the worst days in my life were the last year of my drinking and the first year of my recovery. Because the first year of my recovery, I didn't have alcohol to take away the nightmare that I was living. But I had people like Big Jim, my sponsor. He was 6'7". I don't know if anybody remembers him here or not, but he died when I was 2 years sober. And I'm going to talk about that next week and share that. But for right now, step two, the power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity was and is AA. And if I get too far away from AA, I get restless, irritable, and discontent. And I can tell AA is my medicine because I always feel better after a meeting. Always. I mean, even if I don't feel good. I don't always feel good after a meeting, but I feel better. I gave a lead right here at this podium when I had the flu. I was sick as hell, and I had cough drops, and I had cold medicine. I took the cold medicine exactly 45 minutes before, so I came up here. And when I was up here, I felt great. I didn't cough. I didn't need any of the cough drops or anything. And then I kind of came apart at the seams on the way home. But I felt better when I was actually up here. And I think, and I've noticed this with myself, I don't get too far away from meetings and I start getting restless, irritable, and discontent. And the crime is, I take it out on the people I love the most. I mean, if I'm having a bad day, Cindy or Helen or any of you, you're not going to know it. You're not close enough to me. I got a bride at home, she knows, because my character defects, you know, impatience and control and rebellious behavior start coming out. She sees it. And vicariously, through other people, I've watched many, many people relapse. And what's the kiss of death is all of a sudden you don't see them. You don't see them at the meetings. You talk to them and they say, I'm too busy. I got this to do and that to do. And, you know, and I learned from them because they quit coming to meetings and the next thing, I got a guy that fired me as a sponsor a while ago. He called me up the other night and asked me if I'd be his sponsor. I says, how you doing? He says, not good. I just had a good relapse, but it wasn't good. I says, really? And that is, that's the kiss of death. I had an experience this summer with a guy who's a chronic relapser, and he ends up in intensive care and almost dies and goes to rehab. And I was asked to talk to him, and he called me up, and I was talking to him, and I asked him, what is the power greater than yourself? And I don't want to sound sacrilegious, but he said, God. And I says, where was God a week ago when you decided to drink umpteen bottles of vodka? And see, I think for me, God gives me these tools, but he doesn't control me. He gave me self-will. I don't have to use them. I don't have to go to AA. I can stay home and get miserable. Or I can go to AA and get things straightened out. And in fact, if you think about it, right now, I expect there's probably a bar within 5 or 10 minutes of here. This is Erie, probably less than that. And the thing is, I could get down here right now. I got enough money in my pocket to get drunk. And if I went in and put a 5 or 10 on the bar and said to the bartender, give me a double shot of Southern Comfort, he would do it. My arm works. And God would let me do that, even though he doesn't want me to. He gave me free will. And the thing is, the problem with that is he'd also let me drive home and pay the consequences for that too, you know. Anyway, I'm starting to rattle, so I'm going to shut up. That's step two in my book, and I'm running out of time. And now we have questions. You're welcome. Thank you all for coming back that we're here last week.
Questions?
Thanks, Buzz. I'm Laura, alcoholic.
Hi, Laura.
So did you ever admit that you were insane?
Oh, yeah. Going back to drinking, the way I was very insane. It would be like, I'd be insane if I drank a bottle of Drano. You know, I'd probably be more sane if I drank a bottle of Drano because it would probably kill me right away before I made too much of an ass out of myself, you know, or got arrested. Yeah. Yeah, I think I admit I'm insane every time I say I'm buzzing, I'm an alcoholic. Because, you know, but that's a good question. And I think it's important that that's humility, that we know who and what we are, and we're okay with it.
Anyone else?
You know Kevin.
Kevin asked that. I got some sponsees in here. Can I call them out?
Exactly. Ask them. That relates to my question. Thanks for coming all the way up, and I really appreciate it, and I think so does the group. But when you're working with other people, and you know you're dealing with that powerless unmanageability and insanity, and there, I don't know, for myself, when I got in here, there was, some of it was painfully obvious, and some of it was I was in denial of and actually kind of, you know, offended by. How do you deal with people? How do you deal with the people that you sponsor that kind of aren't buying the program?
Okay. I think that's human nature. If you read the Gospels, Jesus Christ got pissed off at his disciples at times because they weren't doing, you know, I mean, they had little faith, and he would call them on it. One of the things, I don't have it with me, but Wilson said, AA has no authorities. We don't have cops. We don't have sanctions. And we have two authorities. We have a loving God. He's benign. We have one benign and one malign. And we have John Barleycorn. And a loving God says, I'll help you stay sober if you ask me. And John Barleycorn says, if you don't stay sober, I'm going to kill you. And he does. And the thing is, Wilson in the 12 and 12 says John Barleycorn is our best advocate. And if you think about it, there's one thing in this world that's stable, is alcohol. It's going to do the same thing every time. And I was talking to Helen on the way up here about, I have a sponsee that has a really high bottom. He hasn't been desperate. He hasn't had the gift of desperation. And I don't know this, but I'd be surprised if he stays sober. And but the thing is, alcoholism is a progressive disease, and as a sponsor, I can count on it. And if they want to go out, I kind of let them. I don't try to prevent it. Let them go out and then pick them up when they come back. I also had a guy that I was sponsoring, and he fired me because I wasn't militant enough for a sponsor. I don't tell people what to do. I don't get in your face. I tell you that the first session, you know. If you need somebody to yell at you, you need somebody else, you know. But he asked me, he came back because he went out, and John Barleycorn kicked his ass. I didn't say I knew it was going to happen, but I did, you know. You can count on it. If people go out from this room, they're not having a good time out there. I know if I ever heard somebody say, I went out and it was really fun, I'd say, what the heck are you doing back here, you know? When my drinking was fun in the early days, I made jokes about Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't going to come here. Thanks, Kevin. Sponsees will test you. No other questions. I think I'm done. Thank you.